And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Inside Agriculture. We are here in the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, and surprise, I'm Mick Kerr, sitting in for Terry Loomis, who has today off doing the family Christmas thing. And on this interim between Christmas and New Year's, President-elect Donald Trump interviewing Elsa Moreno, the former Agriculture Undersecretary for Food Safety and former President of Texas A&M. She's being interviewed for the job of Agriculture Secretary. But spokespeople for the Trump Campaign Ag Advisory Committee and Transition Team say that Moreno is opposed strongly by a majority of the Trump team. Gary Bays, an attorney, said the Transition Team should consider members of the Ag Advisory Committee, or at least someone who campaigned for Trump. Bays and others on the Trump Ag Advisory Committee also have opposed consideration of North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp for the position. Members of the advisory committee have questioned whether candidates were loyal to Trump during the campaign or have enough experience with production agriculture. Current Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller also planning to travel to likely Florida this week to meet about the Ag Secretary post. Also on the list, Annette Sweeney, former Iowa State Representative who served as chairwoman of the Iowa House Ag Committee. Sweeney also has close ties to Iowa agribusiness leader Bruce Rastetter, who visited Trump Tower earlier this month, as well. And Sweeney, who raises cattle on her North Central Iowa farm, has not been interviewed for a position in the administration, but would be willing to serve, according to a radio interview she did earlier this week. Just a couple days to go for 2016. What does that mean? It means the Veterinary Feed Directive is imminent and takes effect on Sunday morning. Dr. Joe Diedrichsen, veterinarian for Muriel, gives us yet another heads up on the VFD.
What the VFD is for medically important antibiotics, most common one our cattle producers use is chlorotetracycline or brand name oreomycin, and those will have to do it. Thing I want to remind producers about, that goes into effect January 1 in 2017. And any inventory that they have bought ahead of time, thinking they're going to get around the VFD, for them to legally feed it after January 1, they're going to have a VFD. Important part of VFD is you're going to have a good VCPR, veterinary client patient relationship. So veterinarian's going to have to be familiar with your operation. He's going to have to have been physically out there to be able to write this VFD so you can use that chlorotetracycline.
Joe Diedrichsen of Muriel. A reminder that a cattle producer cannot use drugs, including over-the-counter drugs now after the first of the year, in an extra label manner without a veterinarian's prescription. This is now off-label and illegal. Veterinarians will still be able to prescribe feed-grade antibiotics only if deemed necessary. A veterinary client-patient relationship, the VCPR, cannot be established nor maintained solely by telephone or other electronic means. It's face-to-face and in writing. There's a couple of things that you need to know before January 1st. You're listening to Inside Agriculture here in the Meridian Manufacturing Studios. We're taking a break, coming back, talking taxes right after this. Welcome back to Inside Agriculture. For the vacationing Terry Loomis, I'm Mick Kerr here in the Meridian Manufacturing Studios. The return of the wheat midge in North Dakota for 2017? Well, it may not be a widespread problem, but it certainly could be in the Devil's Lake region. Scott Kanoki, extension agent for Benson County, feels the wheat midge in 2017 could be a problem.
I work with the Integrated Pest Management Program, and I got some pheromone traps to trap midge from our entomologist, Janet Knodel. And I put them out, one by Minnewaukan and one by Mattock, and I'm either a really good trapper or something went haywire, but there were nights that I caught just hundreds of them over the course of one evening and as many as 1,000 on one of these sticky traps in about a week's period. So there's definitely raised some suspicion. And fortunately, the majority of the crop was beyond the right stage for the wheat midge to lay their eggs on, so we didn't have a lot of damage. But I went back and I tested a couple of these hot spots, and We have some overwintering midge here in the area, and so it's just something we're going to be keeping an eye on. And I was just going to do a refresher course for guys. It's been a while since we've had big numbers, and just to kind of refresh their memories of what's happened in the past, and hopefully get some folks out doing some scouting and things. And yeah, it's just something we do. Once we find it, we try to get the word out to growers, and we'll be trying to keep tabs on the overwintering numbers. All of those numbers aren't in yet from the soil tests across the northern part of the state, but preliminary numbers do show that there's going to be some overwintering midge in this Manoc and Minnewaukan area. So it's just something to talk about a little bit. We've seen what has happened before. We've had some real impact. Like back in 95, I think we had estimated losses on more than 725,000 acres in the state, with an economic value loss of about $27 million. So this pest can be quite devastating if let go unchecked. But we're going to do our best to keep our eyes open around that time and use our prediction models and stuff just to alert guys to make sure that they're prepared if they need to treat this pest.
Yes, it's the famous orange wheat blossom midge. After a number of years of absence, may make a return appearance in 2017. There's an early heads up from NDSU Extension's Scott Kanoki. But before we get into the fields in 2017, we'll be doing taxes. 2017 tax season coming up. Jan Schaffner is a senior tax consultant with Badgerland Financial in Wisconsin. And she says the 179 code that just became permanent is a good place to start.
As of 2015, the PATH Act actually made it permanent up to $500,000 if the total purchases are $2 million or less. So it gives us a very solid number to year-by-year plan now, knowing what the write-off could be next year, so we can plan a little bit better with current year purchases.
She says any purchases need to be made by the end of the current year, and it has to be on the farm before the 31st.
Correct. And also, you have to make sure that the machine or the equipment or the cattle, that they're on the farm in service. We cannot have a deposit made on the tractor and we're going to bring it on the farm in January because it is not technically in service. So we want to make sure that the equipment is able to be used, the building is operational, but we have to make sure that it's ready to go before we start depreciating anything on it.
But the ability to depreciate the cost of machinery up front can be helpful for farmers, but it can also be a bad thing as well.
It can. It also can be a hindrance as well. As the saying goes, depreciation is not tax avoidance, it is only tax deferral. So if we're taking too much depreciation in accelerated form, where we're writing off the equipment every year that we purchase it, we are not allowing it to go over that 7 years. So we are robbing away from future years' depreciation deduction in the 1 year. So it is a great benefit and a great tool, but we also have to make sure it goes with the plan for the farm or for the business on the long run as well.
There are standard years of deduction for agriculture equipment, but the option is available to extend those years to help offset expected lower incomes.
Correct. There is the standard deduction for farmers, or standard depreciation rate is a farm maker's. And that's over a 7 year year life for the tractor, 10 years for the parlor. But if we wanted to, because we know that our income will be a little bit lower in the first few years here, we can stretch that out and do a straight line over, say, that 7 years goes to 10 years, or the 10-year life goes to 15. You can choose based on what the IRS options are. Not what your option is, but what the IRS gives you for options for life or for years of depreciation.
One other option for farmers to consider, putting money into a retirement account to help defer some taxes. Farmers can find retirement accounts on the market that are similar to what a W-2 employee would be eligible for through an employer. Again, Jan Schaffner of Badgerland Financial over in Wisconsin. We're taking a break. Coming back, more year-end tax planning with NDSU Extension Farm Economist Ron Haugen. Right after this, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. Good morning, everybody. I'm Mick Kerr in for Terry Loomis on Inside Agriculture. Heard on Ag News 890, Thunder 106.1, Lisbon and Fargo, and 91 Classic Country KCJB in Minot. Let's get the weekly box beef cattle report now from the Southern Plains Auctions. Here's Ed Sherwine of USDA Market News.
The daily spot choice box beef cutout ended the week last Friday at 198.27, which was $3.64 higher compared to the previous Friday. And that daily spot choice cutout has jumped over $9 in the past 2 weeks. but there were only 560 loads sold for the week in that daily box beef cutout, which was only about 8% of the total sales. The weekly average choice cutout, which includes all types of sales, including that daily spot cutout, it was $189.58, which was $3.50 higher. And there were 6,526 total loads sold, which was 339 loads lower than the previous week. And the formula sales, they were at 3,319 loads, which was 112 loads lower than last week, but about 51% of the total loads sold. And the exports, as reported in this box beef report, were 694 loads, which was 82 loads lower compared to the previous week, but about 11% of the total sales. And the outfront sales, which don't get delivered for at least 22 days, they were 1,429 loads, which was 86 loads lower than last week and about 22% of the total sales. The daily spot choice rib primal was 44 lower compared to the previous Friday, making it 72 lower in the past 2 weeks. This is a typical seasonal decline because of the tremendous pre-Christmas demand for prime rib to be used at Christmas parties. However, the round and chuck have started their annual rally early this year, pushing the cutout higher, even with that big decline on the rib primal. That normal seasonal decline in the rib usually pulls the choice cutout lower in December until the round starts to make its rally later. And the chuck and round primals together represent over 50% of the total carcass, so they don't have to rally as much to offset the dropping rib primal, which represents only about 11% of the carcass. And the daily spot choice round jumped $23 in the past 2 weeks, which normally doesn't happen in that large of a jump until after the first of the year, and has been driven partially by very good higher outfront sales. And the daily cow cutout was 75 cents lower, and the 90% trimmings were a buck and a half lower on Friday compared to the previous Friday. And the latest report of imported meat passed for entry into the U.S. for week ending December 17th showed 14,518 metric tons of fresh beef passed for entry, which was about as the same as the previous week. And the year-to-date total tonnage is still 13% below last year. And the top four countries have not changed much, and Australia is still down 41%, Canada was up 14%, New Zealand was down 9%, and Mexico was up 18% compared to last year. And year-to-date, we are currently still about 143,000 metric tons lower compared to last year at this time. Thank you. This has been Ed Serwin in Amarillo, Texas.
Thanks, Ed. Here's a farm news note that you may have missed over the end of the Christmas week. A week ago, the Creighton University Rural Main Street Index was weak, reading below the growth neutral for the 16th straight month, but the survey went up. Ranges between 0 and 100 rose to 42.9, its highest level since June, up from November's 36.6. States trending higher include Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota. States trending lower include Colorado, Kansas, Illinois, Minnesota, Missouri, Wyoming, and North Dakota. The Farmland Ranchland Price Index for December fell to a frail 26.8 from November's 30.8, the 37th straight month the index has languished below growth neutral of 50. The December Farm Equipment Sales Index increased to 16.3 from 15.4 in November. That's a check of farm news. This is Inside Agriculture. I'm Mick Kerr. We'll be right back. And good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Inside Agriculture. I'm Mick Kerr for Terry Loomis, who has the day off. The pork producers pay it forward with their community, especially during the holiday season. Pork Checkoff celebrated that with its Hams Across America campaign. Pork Checkoff Public Relations Director Claire Masker says pig farmers typically give back with donations of ham and other pork products.
Some of it was just through producers putting hams at their neighbors' doors, and then some of it was giving back to food pantries, to their local fire departments, police departments. So it was just great to be able to showcase what we already knew producers were doing, let's be able to showcase that through social media, through Real Pig Farming.
The Pork Checkoff asked farmers to share their stories using the Hams Across America or Real Pig Farming hashtag.
We shared stories almost every day between Giving Tuesday and Christmas Eve of producers giving back, and that totaled over 32,000 hams and other pork products that, you know, companies like Iowa Select Farms or small producers like the Greenways up in South Dakota, just giving back to their local communities or giving, paying it forward with the gift of ham and the gift of pork products.
The Hams Across America campaign is all about telling agriculture's story.
You know, and producers don't always want to tell that story, because if you grew up on a farm, it's just something you always do. You always knew that you gave back to your community. But in today's age, where more and more people are removed from the farm, sometimes we have to tell those stories and share that with the community so that we can continue to build consumer trust and goodwill for all the great things that pork producers do across the country.
For more information, producers can contact the Pork Checkoff Service Center. Go to pork.org or call 800-456-PORK. And remember to ham it up this weekend. Net cash farm income and net farm income are two popular ways to measure farm sector profitability, but they aren't the same thing. Net cash farm income tracks cash receipts and cash expenses. Net farm income includes non-cash transactions, including inventory changes, capital replacements costs, and others, and both measures have headed lower since 2013. After several years of higher income, U.S. Department of Agriculture forecasting that net cash farm and net farm income for 2016 will be $90.9 billion and $54.8 billion, respectively. Both amounts fall below the 10-year averages. Before the recent drops, both income measures largely trended upwards. Between 2010 and 2013, rising crop and animal receipts helped to push net cash farm income and net farm income higher. However, prices declined for a large group of commodities in 2015 and fell further this year. Production expenses forecast to contract in 2016, but not enough to offset the drop in commodity prices. Missouri Governor-elect Eric Greitens says the message he heard from farmers during the campaign last November and October was, "Let us farm and keep activists, lawyers, and governments off our backs." To that end, the governor-elect has chosen an outsider and advocate for agriculture, Chris Chin, as the next director of the Missouri Department of Agriculture. Chin was chosen as a U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance Faces of Farming and Ranching Award winner back in 2013. That award given to only four outstanding farmers from around the country. Chris and her husband, fifth-generation farmers who raise hogs, cattle, corn, soybeans, and hay on their farm in northeast Missouri. Chin has given hundreds of speeches around Missouri and across the country, defending farm families and sharing the values that make farming a vital profession. Greitens says her new mission is clear: protect and promote Missouri agriculture so that her kids can grow up to be sixth-generation farmers on their land. And the governor added that agriculture has to double world food production in the next generation, and Missouri farmers can help lead the way. You're listening to Inside Agriculture on Ag News 890, Fargo and Lisbon, and Thunder 106.1 Farm News and Real Country in Lisbon and Fargo, and 91 Classic Country KCJB in Minot. We're in the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, and we'll be right back with more of Inside Agriculture.